Welcome back to Arts Alive. I'm Bill DeYoung from the St. Pete Catalyst. Today, our guest is Ray Roa, the editor-in-chief of Creative Loafing Tampa Bay. Is that the full title, Creative Loafing Tampa Bay?
You're one of the few that gets it right the first time out of the gate, so thank you.
What do people say?
Well, the problem is our Facebook page says Creative Loafing Tampa.
Well, you might want to fix that, Ray.
Yeah. You know, there's so many rules on Meta now, you know.
Creative Loafing has, can you give me the sort of arc of the Covenant? I mean, how long it's been around, and it was Weekly Planet once. Mm-hmm.
I'd give you like my understanding of it, right?
Fair enough. It's better than mine.
Creative Loafing was a publication that I read as a kid. You know, mm-hmm. my dad subscribed to the Tampa Tribune. I read that. Creative Loafing was always around. And I always understood it as a weekly. I always understood it as a place where they write about music.
Yeah.
And I think it's always been that. My understanding of it, according to my chats with Debbie Eason, who founded Creative Loafing Atlanta years and years ago. So she was living in Atlanta, and there were all these like different newspapers, like Haitian language newspapers, Chinese newspapers. You know, Atlanta is this thriving multicultural place, and she's like, let's do one, right? So she made one, and it grew, and then, you know, they expanded to the Bay Area. I think they had one in Charlotte at one point. And the company grew so big at one point, they owned so many papers, Washington City Paper, Chicago Reader. They had a board of directors. It was crazy. But for me, as I understand it, it's just been always this place to read about stuff that back then was out of the box.
Well, that's why they call them alt weeklies.
Alts, right? And then unfortunately, over the last decade, alt has come to mean something else.
I think in the 90s it meant you like Soundgarden and Pearl Jam.
Yeah, or like Nudist or We're a Vegan.
Well, there was that.
Or something. But now there's so many different avenues for all those things. And so we've adopted a little bit of like more restaurant like news, more restaurant reviews. You understand this working at the Catalyst. And you start to see audiences less as monolithic. Like we think like all the weird people read the alt weeklies, but really they're not that weird, right? They learned the weird thing, but they also like the Bucks, right? Like every other person. So I think we've evolved pretty great. Adjusting to the whims and the demands of the internet is always a crapshoot.
Wasn't it called the Weekly Planet at one time?
It was called the Weekly Planet.
It was for one of those. It was different owners or different something.
It's gone through so many different owners.
But it's been here a long time.
Any other Creative Loafing papers at this time. In fact, we're owned by our parent company is based out of San Antonio.
Yeah.
It's called Hava Communications. They own Orlando Weekly. They own San Antonio Current.
Mm-hmm.
And they run this digital agency as well. So we've been through it. I mean, when I got hired full time, we were owned by Southcom out of Nashville. They had the Nashville Scene. I think they still do. And some other publications like that. So, yeah.
So let me ask you, because Creative Loafing is a combination of music mm-hmm. and local politics
right.
and arts and even sports, as you say.
Sure.
What's your demographic? I mean, who is your audience?
You know, that's a great question for James. Our publisher, I think he would know the exact.
Hello, James.
He would know the exact analytical, like on paper, thing. But I mean, anecdotally, I feel like our audience reaches a wide swath of people across demographics. I mean, you know, I've been reading it since I was a teenager.
Not just right? the weird people, like you were saying.
Exactly, and like you know, so there's I do think that there's teenage people reading it who still pick that kind of thing up. I think we write about bands that have members who are in a younger demographic. I think we write a lot about restaurants opening, and I think the only people that care about restaurants opening are people with disposable income to spend at restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the right? people you want as readers,
or
right?
people who work in them, right?
Yeah.
So
well,
you
sure.
get workers, you get people with, and you know, a lot of people like to paint our two metropolises, sorry, Clearwater, because you're included in this, but St. Pete and Tampa as these really big, growing places, but in a lot of ways, it's kind of, they're still both kind of small towns. There's not enough publications to serve them. You know, we write about everything. So, you know, everything from something happening at Water Street to Sparkman Wharf. Ideally, we'd like to write about something happening at the Crest Contemporary or even a garage gallery as
yeah.
we discuss. So we try to cover all that. So to answer your question, I think our demographics all over the place. Who
all
doesn't read
place.
Us? I'm trying to think like who doesn't read us or wouldn't read us. We have something for everyone, I feel like. But
well, I asked Ray to be here today, folks, because he and I recently participated in a panel discussion at Floridorama at the invitation of the lovely and talented Liz Dimmitt
mm-hmm.
on arts journalism in Tampa Bay and the state of. And I just thought it would be kind of cool to continue that conversation a little bit. Parenthetically, I don't know if I've bored you with this story before, but I was actually part of the first Alt Weekly in Tampa Bay.
Which was called?
Which was in the beginning called Rocks Off.
Oh, okay.
Do you know who Bill Templeton is?
That name is very familiar. Okay. I've always wanted to do a throwback and design our paper to look like one of these old, you know, Tampa music magazines.
Well, Rocks Off was the very first year. It was 1980. So I went off to college after the first year, and they changed it to, I think, First Music.
Okay.
And then maybe Players.
Okay.
And it went on for years and years.
Which is awesome.
But I have the first year in a bound volume, the Rocks Off
As you
era.
Should. We should look through that. I think that
you're welcome to steal anything.
Dude, I
want
to see it. Like, I want to see. And it's so cool that you were writing about music back then, because we still try to write about music now.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a very direct lineage there. And the reason I brought it up really is that the reason it was started, other than Bill and I and Kenny and then Eric wanted to get free records from the record labels, was that the local bands weren't getting written about in the Times then. You know, the Times, you know, the major paper in any metropolitan area has a lot to cover. And the Times today, of course, is a different animal. That's another conversation. But that was one of the reasons we did it. There are people like us who want to know about this stuff, who want to know who's playing in the cool clubs.
When I go to a city, the first thing I do is look for the Alt Weekly.
Oh, yeah.
Because with any free time I have, I either want to go to a record shop, bookstore, or go see a show at night, right? And I feel like the Alt Weekly can still do that. And I always tell our contributors, when you are meeting the readers here, whether online or in our print publication, you are informing them on how they're going to spend their time and their money. So that's our job.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I think it's awesome if you can pull up someplace and go see a cool show.
In my career, that's what I did for years and years at newspapers, was I not only wrote calendars, which is probably the bane of your existence too, but I, you know, elaborated on them. That's when I started interviewing people and sort of say, here's more about what you can do here.
Right.
You know, here's a little bit of the backstory for these people. And that kind of evolved into, you know, kind of a bigger, broader thing. And then I worked for, not that this is about me, Ray, but I worked for Connect Savannah, which is the Alt Weekly
Savannah.
Sure,
still around.
Yeah.
I have a copy of Connect Savannah's Best Of on my desk.
Actually, I think they just shut down recently.
Rest in peace.
I was there for 6 years as the arts editor.
And that's a great city to write about the arts.
A lot of stuff happening there. Yeah. And I mean, the film festival alone used to be worth the price of admission, you know.
Yeah.
And we came down here in 2014. This is my hometown. Came back.
Okay.
And, you know, that's all the rest of that. What's your arc with this kind of stuff? I think you said the other night that David Warner brought you in when he was editor over here.
David Warner brought me in. So at some point, so I failed out of USF pretty quickly. It was like 3 semesters. Started going to HCC, and at some point realized I was running out of money to go to concerts. And so I had to find a way. And I was already doing radio at HCC and working on the newspaper there. Mm-hmm. So I just cold emailed somebody at Reacts Music Magazine, which I think you remember.
Sure.
And
you were writing already?
So I wrote for Reacts. Yeah, I was doing like the school newspaper and stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously like writing in my own journals and whatnot and being a newspaper reader. So started doing record reviews for Reacts record reviews.
There you go.
So I did 2 record reviews a week.
Uh-huh.
And then I did an interview with this band called Passion Pit, and that was really cool because I loved that band at the time. And
yeah. We
talked about Elton John's touring bus because they inherited it. So you're just doing all that. You do it all the time. You do it every day. And then a friend of mine affiliated with Reacts, Joel Cook, he started another website, Suburban Apologist. Did that, started freelancing for, and we wrote about local music because I was also writing for Consequence of Sound at the time. It's called Consequence Now. And I was like, writing about national bands there, and same thing. I was like, why aren't we writing about local bands the same way that we write about, you know, a national act? So did that at SubApp, started working with Creative Loafing freelancing for Leilani Polk, who was the music editor before me.
Where is she now? Leilani's great.
Seattle.
Oh.
I think she's with The Strangers still, or maybe had just left. I'm not quite sure, but she's in.
She was great.
Seattle. Jay Cridlin at the Times brought me on, and I helped him with his sound check column, so I did half of the listings.
Oh, great.
And that was it. Just, I mean, you know how it is. You file something every day.
Yeah.
Oh, as
yeah.
best you can.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just keep going, and I was very lucky that Leilani was moving to Seattle. And lucky to interview for that job, and went on full time in 2016, chief in 2019.
It's like you say though, you just you do it every day, it's like muscle memory after a while. Mm-hmm. And you use the smarts that you've developed to say, okay, this is the logical and best way to do this. But you know how to physically do it. You got something out every day now on the online.
Yeah, we publish about in between 50 and 70 URLs a week. Between all the verticals.
When did you become editor? Was that... You went on 16.
So I got hired as a music editor at 16.
Yeah.
Or not at 16. Yeah. In 2016.
You were young.
I'd been freelancing for a while. And then we had a staff cut and became chief in 19.
And David still contributes sometimes,
doesn't
he? And
David still contributes.
I see
He writes about
theater. Of mine.
You guys both interviewed Giles.
Time. Yes, right.
And he acts in the scene. And yeah. Yeah, David was pivotal.
He's a good man. Hey, David.
Awesome, man. He he definitely changed my life.
We talked about how, you know, the Times has kind of abdicated several thrones over the last couple mm-hmm. of years. Does it feel like you're sort of holding the chalice or keeping the light burning for coverage of local music?
I think.
I mean, I don't really do that.
On one hand, I hope that we're doing it well enough that the local bands feel seen and represented. I also am cognizant of the fact that maybe they don't need an alt publication to write a memory week. You have social media now. You can control all that and share that stuff. But to me, I still believe in covering local music in the context of the calendar so that we can continue to see bands live. A basic understanding between us and the readers that we enjoy live music. Sure, we enjoy recorded music, but for us, it's about being in the club, being wherever, enjoying music in person, making those connections. So it is a hill that I'm going to die on. We devote money to it every week for somebody to keep our calendar up on the back end and to start the Music Week calendar. And some weeks we do it better than others. I hope that the artists feel like we're paying attention, that we care about them. Because we do.
Can we talk about the transition from, mm-hmm. by the time you came in, it was pretty much online was king already, but you're still doing a print publication.
Correct.
You know, like some of old timers like me were doing print for 100 years before you came along. You're the only full-time staff person,
Two full-time staffers. Okay. So it's myself and Colin Wolf, who's our digital editor.
Yeah.
And he's also the director of digital for our parent company. So he oversees editorial digital strategy for 3 publications. And so it's us 2 full time. And then we were very fortunate to have a dedicated army of freelancers who love their community and love writing about it. You know,
let's turn the clock back here a little bit to the conversation from that night at Floridorama. Mm-hmm. Arts journalism, you made that eloquent quote very early on. It's like, why do we need arts journalism? And you just said, why do we need art? Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, the first thing somebody said the other night was, oh, there's a dearth of arts journalism here. And I was floored. What?
I was shocked.
I think there's a ton of it, frankly, and it's really good stuff, you know. I mean, I do okay, but I mean, I think everybody, their hearts are in it. You've got some dedicated people on every side doing this.
I don't know that there's a dearth, but there could be more. I don't think there's enough.
Hey, that's good. You know, I wish I had a staff. I wish I had somebody working with me,
sure,
to do local music, because I don't do, as I said, a lot of that, mm-hmm. and that's something I'm too old to go sit in the club till 3 a.m.
It's hard.
You know, yeah,
I drink more Red Bull than I used to.
You're a young man. Come
on, 40 years old, man.
Are you really?
I am. I turned 40 last Thursday.
Get out of here, you're an old dude. Last Thursday, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Give me a wish list. I mean, as far as creative loafing, as part of the Bay Area,
sure.
How would we make things, to your way of thinking, you know, thrive?
You mean at the paper or just the Bay Area in general?
Let's start with the paper.
The paper, I would love to have maybe 2 or 3 more full-time staffers. Would be great. A news reporter ready to do that stuff and support some of our other art stuff. Because as you know, the art stuff isn't the most heavily trafficked, right? But it's so important, so we try to do all these other things to pay the bills there.
Yeah.
So at the paper, we'd love that. I think 2 or 3 staffers would be great. We could do a lot. We've proven that we can do a lot with a little. So that would be great at the paper.
Photographer.
Huh? That would be awesome, you know. And that's the thing. Like, I know who I would hire as a staff photographer, and you know, he could work both sides. He could work for marketing and shoot for our clients, and then come over and shoot editorial for us, new stuff. But I think also we're really fortunate just to know these people, because people are special in that way, right? Not everybody's capable of doing that. You can't just pick a staff photographer up out of the street, right? So there's that. But I mean, locally,
you surround yourself with talent.
And we're very lucky
yeah.
to know a lot of talented, passionate people. Yeah. So that would be great for the paper, I would say.
Do you consider Creative Living an arts paper? You've been kind of stopping there. I mean, to me, it's a lot of things.
I wish we had more arts mm-hmm. in it. I do consider it a paper that cares about the arts, music, visual art, literary items. You know, we have an interview with Edgar Gomez, who's speaking at Tombolo. So in that way, yes. But at the same time, and maybe this is navel-gazing or self-loathing or whatever, but I feel like we could be better. You know?
But isn't that a hallmark of journalism? You're a writer. Sure. Have you ever written anything that you thought was perfect?
No, I think that's what we always tell people. Stop being worried about whether or not it's perfect and just make sure it's out.
And make sure it's accurate and out.
And absorb all those bad feelings that you have about the thing that you wrote, right? And remember it. Remember the pain. And then and then move on. Because you have to steel yourself up to be able to write the next thing.
So let's talk about the state of arts journalism
okay.
Here in the Bay Area. I mean, wish list again, in a perfect world, what would there be? For me, I think it would be the Times would be what it used to be. But, you know, you can't go back. Perfect world.
Yeah, back in the day, it'd be cool. You know, you had Andrew Meacham mm-hmm. writing about, you know, classical music. And you had, I think they had like a society editor, you know, somebody sure. Who was out there. But I also think that there are so many different places that are publishing now that it would be cool if more of those places wrote about art in a serious way. I miss Arts Criticism. Mm-hmm. But as we talked about the other week at Floridorama, I think it all depends on the critic, right? Or like, what is the place of criticism? Because, you know, what if you get the wrong? I don't think there's any more room for like ego in journalism, mm-hmm. you know? And I think for a long time, critics enjoyed this position of power, so to speak. And now they don't have it, right? Like, you're not the only game in town. So if we brought criticism back, I think it'd have to be some kind of different form of it. So more art critics, more arts people writing, more people talking about the ugly side of it, not to be contrarian or to make people look bad, but to improve the state of the arts locally, right?
There are a few soft white underbelly stories that I almost wrote or sort of people don't want to hear that, or maybe it's not the time. I know what you're talking yeah. about. Has social media really stuck a big thumb in the sort of dike of this thing? It's sort of like everybody's got an opinion and it's on social media. Mm-hmm. So does that dilute what, you know, you and I do?
I don't know. I think the best thing that you and I can do, and I think we try to do it all the time, is bring our skill set of and our curiosity to stories. Really try to see the person or the art that we're trying to write about and give it to our readers in a way that is easy and fun to read. Our readers are all really smart, right? People are always like, you got to dumb it down or whatever. And I'm like, no, you don't have to dumb anything down. Like, right? Like, first off, they took the time to read, yeah. right? And so
Joe Hamilton is always telling me the same thing. Our readers are pretty smart people.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
And
yeah.
they can make decisions for themselves. And our job is to show them something that maybe they might not have thought about or look at and encourage them to look at something in a different way and maybe connect with that thing so they feel more connected with where they live. So that when the time comes, they're ready to stand up for and advocate for the place that they live, right?
It's a matter of communication through clarity and, you know, I don't want to say joy, but it's like, yeah, we're doing this because we want life to be good for everybody.
You have to bring some kind of emotion to things. And I think that's what's cool about writing about the arts and arts journalism, so to speak. Like, you're allowed to be subjective. It's not like this thing where you have to be neutral and objective, and you can bring everything. You can bring that joy, that emotion, all of that to arts. The best thing is if you could write about something and explain to somebody why you think it sucks, and they read it, they're like, man, all this stuff that he says sucks, I love.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. So I'm definitely going to see this.
Happens all yeah. the time. You know, I was 17 and reviewing concerts for the Times.
Yeah.
It was a lesson to me right off the bat because you're setting yourself up because somebody's always going to disagree with you. Mm-hmm. Right. So I would say, well, you know, Thin Lizzy was fabulous. I thought Queen was really stupid with a lot of special effects. Letters. I'm 17. I'm getting letters calling me an idiot, you know. And
good.
So you learn. That's the whole thing, you know. There's an element in what we do.
Right.
Of just saying, I'm doing this and I'm putting it out in front of you.
Yeah.
You can take what it.
Am
take
I right? Am I what, wrong? I don't know.
You can take from it what you want.
Sure.
You know, and hopefully it helps people sort of, as we were saying, react and respond and hopefully visit what's going on in there. That's what it's all. It's all about enlightening.
And for by no means am I comparing ourselves to him, but like think about the Kendrick Lamar halftime show, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the game anymore. Everybody is still talking about whatever Kendrick Lamar did.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
It's so funny, man. When you grow up, everybody knows. I don't know if it's true for you. It probably is. You know, when you're coming up, it's like, can't wait to get out of the hometown. It's like, no, man, this is Scoresville. Because when I was coming up, I remember when The Clash and Elvis Costello came out in like 77. That was like a ray of light through the whole Doobie Brothers Kansas thing. And there was nothing happening in town. Those guys never even came here. I saw Costello at the High Life Fronton in 77. In
Tampa, where the Home Depot is now, right there, south of Gandy, right?
But it was sort of like, oh,
Bob
man,
Marley played there.
It's just not, that's right, the Wailers did play there. It's like, I can't wait to get out of this town. I saw Cheap Trick there, too, for the first time I ever saw them, loudest band.
Before he lived in Safety Harbor.
Yes, before, and loudest band I ever saw. Unbelievable.
I love loud bands.
Couldn't wait to get out of St. Petersburg, you know, and I did, and I moved around. I was in Gainesville for years and, you know, worked for the newspaper up there. La, 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 moved around. As I got older, I couldn't wait to get back here, you know, and it's been 10 and a half years now. It's a different place, but I think you said something like this in the beginning. It's still the same place.
In a lot of ways. Yeah. And I never experienced that, like wanting to get out. So my second job ever was as a security guard at the Masquerade. I had a friend who was working there and like, you know, back office stuff. And he got me a job there with Tom DeGeorge. And all of a sudden, every night I'm at work, I'm like at a show.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. I met Dimebag Darrell at a meet and greet, and he's like, I'm Darrell. And I wasn't into metal at the time, and I had no clue who I'd met. He got shot and killed like 2 weeks later.
Oh, man.
Right? I'm watching Jimmy Eat World from the side stage because that's my job. So I was always felt like I was catching up, right? I was reading about all these shows at the Fronton. I was reading about Blue Chair. I was reading about all this stuff. I've always felt like I've been catching up, or Nirvana down at the old, where Zydeco is in Ybor now, right? So I was always catching up, and I always loved it. But it was enlightening, you know, last week to hear you say, you know, there was a time there wasn't anything going on.
Oh yeah. It was dinner. You know? It was dinner theater.
Yeah. So for me, I've always been playing catch up. I've never really wanted to leave, and I don't necessarily want to.
That's because you're a young man.
Right.
You weren't here in the tumbleweeds going down Central Avenue. Days.
Correct.
The night in May of 1965, when they opened the Bayfront Center.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I don't know if you know this.
They had indoor soccer there, right?
Well, we used to see concerts there.
Right.
Eventually.
Where the Dolly is now.
Yeah. It was 7,000 seat arena, big, ugly, boxy thing. The circus would come every year when we were kids. The opening night, they had an orchestra. They had Jonathan Winters as the MC and, like, you know, the Limelighters or the Kingston Trio or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it was front page in the Times the next day.
Huh.
You know, all these women in gowns and men in tuxedos and, you know, the Fred Waring Orchestra played, you know, hits for dancing and front page. On the same day, on the back page of the same section, that big, and I'm holding up like 3 inches of news type here, the Rolling Stones played Jack Russell Stadium that night. That's... fans rioted 3 songs in, chased them off stage. The mayor says, we'll never have music, and we'll never have rock and roll, is what they called it then, music in Clearwater again. The Stones go back to the Fort Harrison Hotel, and that's not Keith Wright's Satisfaction.
Yeah.
That happened the same night. And to illustrate, this is a great illustration for me about why we do what we do. The Times, Jonathan Winters, the orchestra, Stones on the back, you know, it was sort of like those dirty teens and the long hairs from England. And you know, it was an afterthought on the back of the paper.
Which is sad, because there was somebody at that paper that couldn't be loud enough or influential enough to say, this is a great band.
Or this is a much, you know, at least in those days, as big a story that people are getting. That's where history was made. Just sort of,
and that's why you can't gatekeep newsrooms, right? If somebody's talented, bring them in if you can, and let them have a voice in the thing.
Amen to that. I have my own wish list, but you know, we'll save that for another time. It is time to say goodbye, Ray.
Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, man, thanks so much for joining us today, and. It's cltampa.com?
cltampa.com.
It's not Tampa Bay, right?
Actually, if you type in cltampabay.com, you will get to CL Tampa. It'll redirect you.
Ray Roa from Creative Loafing has been our guest today. Thanks again, my friend.
Of course. Thanks for having me.